Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night yet again. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Brody virtually, Silas in the studio. We've got a pretty packed show. The off season, you know, there's always some of these weeks where a bunch of news drops, and it always drops after Grip Locked has been recorded.
There's three things in life that I can count on: death, taxes, and the big news dropping after Grip Locked. That's it.
You know what's so funny is I remember having the conversation when we were trying to move Grip Locked back. We were doing Grip Locked on Thursdays. We're like, man, like all the news drops like Thursday afternoon or Friday. Like it's so annoying that like we can't, like it always happens right after we film. We can't get any of the news. And we're like, well, you know what? Like it makes more sense. Like, of course stuff's going to be released Thursday or Friday because like tournaments are happening on Friday and stuff. Like doing the show then, of course we're not going to get news. Let's move it to Monday so that we have like a tournament to talk about. There's always going to be the news of the previous week. And then all the news moved to Monday.
Yeah.
And just immediately.
I don't know.
It was wild.
I don't know what that is. It's way too consistent. So there obviously is some sort of trend there. And I don't know why.
Like, why is Monday a news day for disc golf?
I don't know why.
You'd think it'd be like the slowest day.
But it is one of those of where it's like, do you guys need to do that mini show on Wednesday? Do you need to have a mini show? Because obviously that was really good how during the season Monday would be talk about the last tournament, and then Wednesday would be talk about upcoming tournaments, and then obviously whatever news breaks in between. Do you need to have a Thursday, like a little 30-minute Thursday, like wrap up of like, or do you guys have to just wait?
Most weeks it's not worth
it.
But
nothing.
There's
nothing.
We got a little something in the works for the preview show for this upcoming year. I won't spoil too much, but we got a little something in the work. So that's exciting at least. We'll at least have that coming. But yeah, most weeks, I mean, if we had a Thursday show, it would just be 30 minutes of me passing Trevor a disc while he's blindfolded.
Yeah, which from some of the comments, not great for audio. Not great for audio.
We didn't bring it back. We didn't bring it back. It was fun. It's fun to do.
Yeah.
But we'll keep it on social.
What's the situation with the potential new show? I did reach out to a bunch of people, and it seemed like a bunch of the big hitters, if you will, like the ones that are like the no brainers of like, yes, that person would be great to have. They all seemed somewhat interested. What's the status of that?
The new version of Debate Night, Trevor's got a bunch of applicants in his email. He's been reviewing those, making like a secondary list. I think the goal, at least in my head, is to kind of launch it around January to make that transition then.
Heck yeah.
So over the next few weeks, Trevor will probably run a few test shows or get a few different groups of people, make sure we know how it's going to flow and everything, and make sure everyone like understands the premise of the show before we throw it in live. Well, obviously not a live show, but do the recording. So, I would imagine hopefully January that switch will happen. But yeah, it seems like it's going to work. It seems like we got enough personalities, both known and unknown, which was what Trevor really wanted, was like some people that, you know, just right now aren't on disc golf media at all that are have good knowledge and good personalities to come through to be able to, you know, have a platform to pop onto. So it seems like it's working out. So we're kind of moving forward until there's a reason not to.
I like it. All right. Very well. I can't wait. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an exciting time. The first piece of news that dropped yesterday was Anthony Barella leaving Innova after I think he said 9 years of sponsorship, for some people it's like whatever, but 9 years of sponsorship for him is like he was probably like 13, 14.
Yeah, this is what he said. He said, these past two weekends I took down the Arizona State Championships and the Big Arm Challenge. He talks about his rating, about how he shot 1058, 1057, winning by 14, winning by 10. So he's playing really well right now. And then follow that up with, these wins were bittersweet because they were my last two tournaments as a sponsored Innova player. These past 9 years have been a dream come true for me, and I want to thank Innova for believing in my skills and always supporting myself and my family out on the road. Although it's upsetting to leave Innova, I'm excited for what the future holds, and I know I made the best decision for myself. So, a few things. Yeah, what you said exactly. 9 years, that's basically since that was before he was even a known player, right? Like he got kind of known when he got mixed in with Paul as a junior, right? Like that was kind of, he was kind of like Paul.
He was always known as like the mini Paul.
So he's always thrown Innova. Everyone has known him as an Innova player. So this is obviously a way bigger move than someone that has bounced around throughout their career. From the posts that I'm getting, I want to thank Innova for believing in my skills and always supporting myself and and my family out on the road. Although it's upsetting to leave Innova. So what that sounds like, trying to read into this more, is it sounds like he wanted to stay with Innova, clearly because he's probably just used to the discs and comfortable with those, because those are really the only discs he's been playing with in tournaments. But it sounds like he was probably offered something bigger and Innova was not willing to that would be my guess.
That's the vibe I was getting. Because he also said like he made the last line was like he made the decision that's best for his family or his future or something like that, right?
I know I made the best for myself. Let's remember, he's still like 20 years old. So if he would have said like this is the best for my family, we'd be like, all right, dude, chill. You don't have really you have a girlfriend. Yeah. So
So to me, I agree. To me, that sounds like if Innova would have matched whatever deal he got elsewhere, he probably would have stayed. But obviously, there's no way to really know. I've seen a lot of speculation where he's going. One of the speculations I've seen is Lone Star, because they have teased that they're announcing someone big in January. I don't think that's it. I don't really see him going there. I've heard speculation of Discraft. The only hesitancy I have towards that is I remember years ago when Paul left Innova to go to Discraft and like Hamiz did the same around that time. Obviously, AB is kind of in that friend group. And I remember him not wanting to leave because he was so much in Paul's shadow. That's how a lot of people viewed him at the time. He's broken out of that now. But back then, like, everyone viewed him as mini Paul McBeth because he was always with Paul. His form looked very similar to Paul, and he just didn't want to.
That's not
a thing
anymore.
No,
it's not.
So I could definitely see Discraft being a possibility now, whereas it might have not been before. He also Arizona ties Yuli, Team Discraft captain. He does have ties with Hamiz, does have ties with Paul. He's good friends with all of them. I could definitely see Discraft. I could also see the final one I've heard is Infinite because of Drew Gibson ties with that. So I don't know. I think that one of those three makes sense. I think Lone Star is the least likely. I think Discraft's the most likely, but I have no idea. It'll be definitely interesting to see where he ends up.
Yeah, and I don't really get too much knowledge on these things as far. I mean, I had a long conversation yesterday, but I don't try to get too much of like insider knowledge, because then it's like, I like to be able to come on this podcast and just say my opinions and thoughts. And it's hard for me.
And not have it like influenced by stuff you know.
Yeah, it's hard for me to be like, if I knew AB was going to MVP, it'd be hard for me to be like, well, let's speculate. Like, could he go to Dynamic? Could he go to...
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's tough. So I try not to get too much information, or I at least try never to get information that I can't like actually talk on. But I could see all three of those spots you said. Like, I didn't even think about Lone Star, but you are right. Like, they have been constantly hinting at wait for bigger news. I can't imagine them paying that much money for Nico. I would assume Nico right now is at a crazy discounted rate at like actually how much he would have been had he not been suspended and all those things. I feel like he is walking on eggshells a little bit. So he probably didn't have too many people interested in signing him. So they probably got him at a really good discount. So they could have the money to throw around. And AB is an interesting one because he's very much close to the level of like a Gannon Burr in the sense of young, super talented, high ceiling, but just hasn't had as much early success as Gannon. But if you sign him for a 3-year deal somewhere, you know, to think that he could win a major, he could win some big tournaments and stuff, like, that's not a crazy thing to think about. So I don't know what value, like what someone would be willing to do. So like a Lone Star, would they be willing to take a big shot on someone like that? Maybe. But if we, someone did ask what you think his best landing spot is for AB. So like thinking about on the AB side, what would be his like ideal spot? I feel like he would be better suited on a team that didn't have as many established players already. So someone like a Lone Star, where he would become, it'd be basically him, Nico, and Chandler Kramer, right? Like that would be the team, essentially, the big names on that team. I could see like an MVP. It'd be like him, James Conrad, Sarah Hokum. Three people there.
Yeah, I mean, I think plastic wise,
Infinite might be the best move for him, because then he could still throw all his Innova stuff, and then it'd basically be be him and Drew, as the two top dogs there.
Yeah, I mean, I think for his game, plastic wise, if we're going to another manufacturer, if we're taking the mixed bag out of the equation, because I agree, going to a mixed bag and being able to keep your current bag would be the best scenario game wise. But sidestep to like another manufacturer, I think the Discraft transition would be the easiest for him to make, because he has so many friends that have already made that transition. So he'd be able to easily be like, hey, Paul, I had, or Hammes, I had, you know, this run of Destroyer, this is how it was flying for me. What did you fill that with? And they could immediately tell him like Zeus, Force, whatever it ends up being. So I think that transition would be the easiest. But as far as like a roster goes, I agree, at Discraft, there's a lot higher chance of him being overshadowed, because you'd have to jockey for position a lot more. Versus, I mean, honestly, just straight lineup wise, Prodigy wouldn't be a bad fit, because he would just slide right into that young core. Ooh. Where like I feel like a lot of the young core is getting hyped together. Obviously, the front runner is Ganon, but he would get thrown right in with Isaac, Alden, Ganon. I don't think he fits the vibe of that group.
He would exactly. It's like
it would get the hype.
He would. I mean, he would almost kind of be like the ugly duckling amongst the swans, right? Like. Like his age for sure kind of fits in with that young vibe, but like him as like his personality and stuff, like I wouldn't foresee him all of a sudden just being in Alden's vlogs and like being a part of that crew. So like that could be kind of weird, of where it's like that, and that's something that Prodigy has to probably think about a little bit, is like they do have that close-knit crew. And I mean, but they also have Kevin Jones. Like, let's not forget about Kevin Jones. Like, Kevin Jones is still on that team as well. So they also have some people outside. But I think that team right now, when everyone thinks of Prodigy right now, they think of that young crew, the Alden, the Ganon, and the Babcock. You know, like they think of those guys. So, and Isaac Robinson. What the heck? Don't forget about the Robinson brothers. So,
Never forget about them.
So it'll be interesting.
Dynamic's not a bad fit. He would be in Ricky's shadow a little bit, but Dynamic doesn't have a deep enough team that he's really getting overshadowed by a lot of people.
I feel like he would get the worst deal too with Dynamic.
He probably would. I think Dynamic
threw a lot of their Easter eggs in their baskets already. I don't know how many Easter eggs they got left sitting that round.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't know what his Innova deal was and what Innova was refusing to match. You know, because there is a chance where, like, if you look at AB's resume, he's got a lot of potential, but he doesn't have a lot of realized potential. To where, like, if Innova's looking at the past and being like, well, what have you done? He doesn't have a ton to, like, bring to the table of, like, I've won this. But he has an enormous upside of, like you were saying, it wouldn't be weird for him to have a Ganon Burr year next year. Mm-hmm. And he's the U.S. champ. He wins a few pro tours. You know, like, it wouldn't be weird for him to, like, step into that type of role. So if Innova is not looking at the future and a different company is, then, like, I could see Innova just not being willing to match a contract that's realistically not that high for an AB caliber player. It'll definitely be interesting. MVP, would probably have the money, probably have the team. I just don't know if I can see him throwing those discs. But I couldn't see James Conrad throwing those discs
either.
Yeah, now he's synonymous with it. Now you're just
like James Conrad, MVP. I do like this format that a lot of players have been doing, of where they basically just let you know, I'm not going to be, like, I'm leaving my sponsor. Like, I'm not going to be with my sponsor. Or, you know, whether they're getting out of a contract or just not re-signing, they just come out and they're just like, I'm not going to be throwing Innova. I'm not going to be throwing Dynamic. I'm not going to be throwing Discraft, whatever it may be. And then we just are left with speculation. And then there is no real, like, timeline of, like, okay, in a couple days, we'll know where they're going to go. Like, it's different for everyone. So it just leaves it kind of a mystery until you wake up one day and you see it on Instagram. We didn't talk much about it, but, like, Paige Shu's kind of in that same boat. And she just recently, I guess, went on Charlie's podcast, The Upshot, and was talking about some stuff on there. Her deal's a little bit more interesting on the side of, like, what's really going on, because obviously her, I think, father is the CEO of Dynamic Disc. Is that correct?
He's high up there.
What was the actual CEO position? Yeah, he's not CEO. He's the CEO is
he's high
the CEO is Rusko. Yeah. So he's one of the top guys. And I think, like, a lot of her family members, I believe her mom works at the store and does probably other stuff, because I think I met her when we were there at Dynamic Disc Open. I believe she was in the store working, I believe, and doing other stuff, packaging, shipping, all that stuff. So her family is, like, heavily tied in there. And it seemed like, from the little excerpt that I read from the interview, it seemed like, did you happen to listen to the interview or no?
I didn't even see she was.
Yeah. So from what I read from the excerpt, it seemed like she was almost kind of not really, it wasn't as like a burial or really like throwing someone under the bus, but it was kind of like, she kind of just like walked by and gave them like a little hip check into oncoming traffic, right? Like, it wasn't super out there of where she was really just trashing them, but it was an interesting thing, since her family still works there, of like saying, like, yeah, they just weren't able to give me what I need. Their discs are overseas, so like I wasn't able to get the discs I needed. Basically,
I did see that
similar to like I just wasn't able to get the support I needed from them, which,
yeah,
we'll see where she goes too, because that she's another wild card, because I feel like her stock was rising, and then she just kind of left tour, right?
Well, she got married. Yeah, she got married, had a kid,
and then just,
so she just disappeared off tour.
Disappeared for a while, and it wasn't. And I think everyone's different when it comes to like having kids and how soon they want to come back. And she obviously took time to do the parenting and the mothering and all that stuff. But now it sounds like, from all the posts that I've seen from her, it sounds like she's got the competitive itch again and is coming back full force. And, you know, on certain courses, obviously her biggest weakness is distance, right? And on certain courses, though, we see other girls as well, like Holly Finley, someone that comes to mind, where her distance isn't the greatest. Missy Gannon, her distance isn't necessarily up there. But like these women, like when they're on the right course, they can beat anyone. And I think Paige Shu fits into that as well, of we might have another contender at specific courses that don't require big distance. So it'll be interesting to see where she lands. Any thoughts or opinions on where she might end up going?
No, I was just looking, because what you said there, like, I'm wondering, Paige Shu, I think, would have been of the core Dynamic Discs FPO players, right? You have Kona Panis, she's locked in. You have Valerie Mandahano, I just looked it up, her contract's up next year. You have Holland Handley, her contract's up this year. Paige Shu, I feel like of that list, they just re-signed Macy Vela-Diaz. Of this list, Paige Shu, I feel like, was probably one of the easiest.
I didn't want to talk about the Macy re-sign, but continue. We'll get that afterwards.
Yeah, so I feel like of that core, Paige Shu is one of the easiest to keep. So the fact they lose her, it does bring in my mind at least a question of Holland Handley and Valerie Mandahano, of like, can they keep them? When Holland Hanley will find out this year, Valley Mandahana will find out next year. And to some extent, it seems similar to the Kona deal we saw last year, right? Where Kona's dad's the director of marketing for Innova, a lot of family ties to Innova. They moved from Colorado out to California years ago for them to work with Innova. And then a similar thing where she was just like, Innova just isn't going to support me at the level Dynamic Disc is willing to. And so she walks away from what her family's so tied to. I'm getting like similar vibes to a certain extent, right? Where like very tied to Dynamic, but for on a player aspect, you know, and props to Dynamic, you know, you do have to just evaluate a player, know what they're worth to you, regardless of family ties or anything like that. Because I think previously, sometimes in disc golf, like things would get very buddy-buddy. And like, if you have family ties, then you're willing to overspend or whatever on a player. And if Dynamic feels like whatever Paige was asking for, that it's just not worth it, then yeah, you know, if she can go find it somewhere else, that'd be great. I'm not 100% positive. I've heard the only name I've heard thrown in the hat, it was actually from our Discord server, was some dude's claiming that he's positive she's going to Discraft. Completely no way to verify him as a source or anything like that, but that's the only company I've heard. I've also heard some people speculating that she's stepping off the team because she's just done with disc golf. That's not the vibe I got at all.
No.
But
what?
That's what some people were speculating.
That's not the vibe I got from the announcement. That's a terrible take.
Yeah. Those are the only two takes I've seen personally, is Discraft, and then this one person was, actually I saw two or three people that were like, oh, well, she's still going to be involved with Dynamic. She's just off their roster.
I think,
and I was like, that's not the vibe I got.
I got very like, went to USDGC, played, and was like, holy cow, I can still compete. She probably was like very underprepared, I would say, like in the sense of what she used to do as far as training and practice at USDGC, and went out there and was like, oh, I'm still like kind of in the mix. So I'm sure she was thinking like, if I just go full force and like really give it all my effort again, like I can still win. So I think having that confidence and that kind of feeling of like, I'm right there. Yeah. I do not get the vibe that she's just like stepping away and it's going to, I feel like she's going to full tour. I would bet money on that, because I also believe I saw something with Grady saying that he also is going to full tour. So that probably makes sense that they're probably going to tour together, obviously. So we'll see what she ends up. You did mention Macy. I want to go back to her. That was a good re-signing on her part. Or that was a big, I guess, re-signing for Dynamic is what I should say on for her. I still think she has a lot of potential. It just seems like right now she is having to try to figure out like that next level to get to, because there's just been a lot of tournaments where she kind of is in the mix early and then kind of fades late. And watching her game, she has a lot of talent and a lot of skills. I think there might just be some of the growing pains of like trying to figure out how to do it when the pressure is at the highest. You know, I think they were probably, you know, she still is a pretty new player. I believe last year was her first full year touring. And so I do think she was probably able, or Dynamic was probably able, to still kind of just have her in the same contract and re-sign her.
Well, they upped her team. She's on the Supreme team. I don't fully know what that means within them, but I believe it's one of their higher teams. So it'd be, it's like on Discraft having like the elite team.
Yeah.
Versus,
and the actual
Discraft calls are small, lower teams.
I think they go tour team and then elite team. But the only, you know, again, we don't know these contracts, but the only thing that they could have maybe done is said, like, we're going to give you a tour series disc. Right. And so for Dynamic, like that's, again, for the player, that might be like, holy cow, that's a huge step. For Dynamic, that's not really that much crazy money exchanging. It wasn't like they gave her a bonus or increase. And they might have. We don't know. We're just speculating. But my guess would be is they probably offered things that were easy for them to offer and not crazy more money out of their pocket. And the reason I'm saying this is, going back to the Paige Hsu thing, you would think the easiest person to be able to re-sign or continue on the team would be a Paige Hsu with the family ties. I think we are starting to see a little bit of the player bubble that we talked about getting close to popping, because if I'm Paige Hsu, I'm thinking I'm a world champion. I can compete. I also, not only am a world champion, but I'm also kind of like the darling of disc golf, right? Like, she has a pretty big following. A lot of people root for her. And I'm sure she was looking at the Kona deal. I'm sure she was looking at some other deals across the FPO division and was saying, like, I should be getting close to that. And this is where I think the bubble is going to hit, is if you constantly are having players looking at other players and saying, I should be getting that. I should be getting that. If they're getting that, I should be getting that. Like, eventually the bubble is going to hit. And yeah. And I think Innova has taken the lead, and I think they're still proving that, of where they have their couple people, they have their guys that they're willing to pay, and those guys are super happy being there. And if you're saying, like, hey, I need to get paid at least close to what they're getting paid, they have shown that they are completely,
they're willing to just say, all right, yeah, deuces.
So we'll see. It is interesting, but you know, disc golf is still an extremely small sport, and the money coming in is still extremely small compared to other sports. And I just don't know if these teams, you know, these manufacturers can just shell out 5, 10, 15, like, big contracts. I don't know that many of them that can do that. And has it been proven that that's the most effective way of going about it? So.
Yeah, I think that's still the big question to me, is like, let's just look at the biggest deals in disc golf, right? The Paul McBeth and the Ricky Wysocki deal, $1 million a year. At the end of the day, these manufacturers have to look and, like, would those $1 million make me more elsewhere, right? For Paul, I think Paul's $1 million straight
worth
in,
it.
Probably a very good investment for Discraft, especially the initial launch, right? Ricky, it's tough to see from the outside looking in, because Paul, you can see directly how many players are throwing Lunas, Onyxes, Zeuses. And yeah, you could argue that some of that's the mold, but the majority of it is that it's a Paul mold, because, like, the Luna and the Roach, you know, very, very close discs when you hold them in your hand. And, you know, as far as, like, the Onyx goes, you know, you could accomplish very similar shots with a Raptor. You can accomplish pretty much any disc, you can accomplish similar shots. So I don't think it's 100% the mold. It's Paul tied to the mold. So there's a very direct correlation there of, like, these discs are moving. They can track that because of Paul. Ricky hasn't had that. He has a Saki Bomb Slammer, but that's, like, the only mold. And that mold, they haven't done, like, a full production normal stock run. They're just still kind of doing, they did their, like, first run, proto run. They did the Saki Bomb Slammer Pro Tour Championship run, the Raptor Eye Slammer. They've done some, like, fun runs with it, but they haven't done, like, a full production. So, like, looking at that, if you're dynamic, and then on top of that, you have the Kona deal on the flip side of that coin. We don't know the Paige deal, but we know Paige is making Discraft a lot of money. We don't know Kona's making Dynamic a lot of money. So I think the way Discraft's done it, they're probably looking at their return being like, yeah, these investments in Paige and Paul made a lot of sense. Dynamic, to be honest with you, a year into this, I don't know if they're looking at the Ricky and Kona deal going, yeah, that was a great decision. And so now other companies looking from the outside in, they all talk to each other. There's probably scenarios where players are shopping themselves around thinking, all right, this is my year. This is my time. Last year, look at all these big contracts they're signing. And they're stepping in and going, what the heck? What do you mean I'm not worth, you know, one third of Ricky's deal? Like, what do you mean I'm not worth $300,000 a year? And companies are like, what do you want us to do? Like, we just don't have it. Go elsewhere. And they go elsewhere, and it's like, you're not finding it elsewhere either. I would be surprised if that's not happening behind the scenes. Cause, like, to say, like, a third of Ricky's deal a year. So we'll just say, like, well, let's just say $250,000 a year, the Dickerson deal. Four years, $1 million. I don't think there's that many players that are getting offered that right now, but I would bet that there's probably three times the amount of players thinking they're worth that than being offered that. So I think it's going to be a very interesting time where, like, a lot of players' expectations of what they're worth because of the contracts that are public are a lot higher than what they're probably getting offered behind the scenes. I think that might have to do with some of the players, like, stepping away, looking for shopping themselves elsewhere. And we still haven't seen a company get fully bit by it yet. But we could. That's definitely a possibility where if your Lone Star has, you know, a full other business that's funding this in their like typical manufacturing gig. But if you are a company like Clash or something and you sign a huge player and you lock them in and you're like, this is it, you know, we're taking a big risk. There's a real world where a year into that big risk, you're done. You're out of business because you just can't afford
it. And as things get more competitive, I think manufacturers can't do the same old like they used to, right? Where it's like, well, we're just going to sign this player. They're going to throw our discs and have our name plastered all over them. And that's it. Like that's not good enough anymore. You have to find creative ways of creating content, of marketing them, of doing things that excite people to want to throw the disc that they're throwing. And it can't just be all on the... Now, some players, sure, you can have, you know, you can do the Lone Star method of where, you know, we've joked about this before, of where like you sign all these, you know, pretty much anyone that wants to have a sponsorship of Lone Star.
600 plus players to the Ranger
team. You sign all these people and they all have to throw Lone Star and you don't really do anything for them other than just give them, I don't know, what would they end up getting, like a couple discs and then a discount or something? Or
well, yeah, and it was a very similar...
Trevor,
like,
just had an interview with him, right?
From what I understand, they basically got a discount, but you have to fill your bag. So you get like four discs, but you got to buy the other 21 discs if you want in your bag. They made a killing off their Ranger team.
No, it's
regardless of if their Ranger team markets
for them
or not.
It's an extremely smart idea. And again, we've talked about this. It's very similar to like skateboarding in that culture of like players just want to be able to say that they're sponsored, even though they might be getting hosed as being sponsored. Because they might not be getting as much support, whatever. And again, it's like, if that's what you want to do, there's nothing wrong with that, but that doesn't necessarily work on the high end, right? Like if you're going to pay someone $100,000 to be, you know, to throw your disc and stuff, some players, sure, you can just sit back, give them $100K and they can do their thing, and that will make your money back and then some. Other players, with just how coverage is working, with just how disc golf media works and all that stuff, other players, like, that doesn't work. If you don't have any sort of plan to make that player a bigger name, to put them in spots to where they have fan interaction, like if you don't have any of that and you're just like, we're just banking on them making lead cards, we're banking on them winning tournaments, we're banking on them doing all these things, and they're not, and you might be in a world of hurt. And so I think this is where, you know, certain team, you know, certain of these manufacturing and stuff, like, I think we are going to see some different styles in how they operate with their teams moving forward over the next couple of years, because you can't just sign someone for a 4-year, $250,000 deal. Like, let's just say this. The difference between a Kona deal and a Kristen Tatar deal, same amount of money, right? I would say that Dynamic has probably been putting, not probably, Dynamic has definitely done more with Kona than Latitude has done with Kristen. From what I've seen on social media and content and all that stuff, the only time I really ever see Kristen and Latitude connected is when she wins, which she did a lot. So like that worked because you were able just to pick someone that won a lot. So you didn't really have to do much. So you kind of hit the jackpot, the lottery in that sense. I know Kona has gotten a lot of crap for her performance and stuff like that. But if Dynamic was able to find creative ways to continue to get her talked about in a good spotlight, to get her in front of people in a good spotlight, to like kind of have these different content pieces around her, they could make that deal just as worthwhile. Like they could bring the value up at least, versus if you go the Kristen Tatar route where it's like, well, we're just going to sit back and wait for her to win and then we'll make a post about that. Like that only works if the player is performing well.
If they win.
And so we'll see. We'll see how it works. Like Innova, they have like, again, they've kind of hit the jackpot in the sense of like, they have their big players being Calvin, who is in the mix a lot. They have Big Germ and Nate Sexton, who have Jomez. So they know like those guys are going to do it themselves. So they can sit back and kind of be like, we're going to be fine. But we'll see.
Well, I think a big thing, because you said it earlier, you know, disc golf is still so small. So realistically, within the current pool of disc golf players, there's only so much money to be circled around in the sport and made. To where if I'm a manufacturer and I have $500,000 a year that I can allocate to a team, and I'm looking at it thinking, man, I could sign one, maybe two big players, or I could spend $500,000 a year, the same money, on effort to grow disc golf and get new players that have never played before and they're introduced to the sport through my plastic. I think that's more worth it. Because like to me, I'm very like Innova to this day is still the brand that feels the best in my hand. The only thing I can attribute that to is that's the brand I learned how to play disc golf with, because I watch it with other people who are like just now getting into the sport, and I introduce them and I recommend like a Soul, because I think it's one of the best beginner mids, a Heat, you know, a Paradox. I recommend these other discs, and then I hand them an Innova disc down the line, and they're like, this just doesn't feel good. Like I don't like how it feels. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then they're like, the Z plastic, or if I get them on MVP train, Neutron plastic, that's what just feels good and comfortable, because like what you get introduced to the sport with, a lot of times that's what feels like home. So if you're, you know, a company that's just, if you're Clash and you can get into a huge PE program that you're in, you know, a bunch of schools across the country, yeah, the majority of the people that are introduced to disc golf might play it for 6 months or a year and not touch it again. They might never touch it after that, after the first class, but you're going to have this core group that gets addicted to the sport, and they're introduced to the sport through your discs, through your plastic, and then they're going to always come back to that. And like, to me, that's a big marketing pool that a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, that is a good point about like definitely try to get them starting young. And I'm sure there are programs that can be created from some of these companies that would definitely help that. The one thing I would say that is, you know, a big piece is like, what is the reason why so many companies have sponsored either athletes or sponsored influencers or ambassadors or any of that? Like, what is the reasoning for that? Well, if you have some random CFO or CEO or someone that is like behind the scenes kind of person show up to a 2,000 person assembly hall and put on a presentation, you might have a lot of people fall asleep. But if you get an ambassador, if you get a Tony Romo to come and talk about the product that this company makes, like that is going to resonate with so many more people. And
I do have to, well, but is it, how much of it is because everyone would know who Tony Romo is?
Well, my point being, like, taking what you said with like the gym, like getting in gyms and stuff. If you're a kid and you have your gym teacher be like, hey, I'm going to teach you guys a new sport today, right? And they are terrible at it.
Yeah.
Because they're not very good at disc golf. They can't teach it. They can't throw whatever. You're going to be less likely continuing that on. Versus if you had a professional that was good come in with the coach or with the PE teacher and was like, the PE teacher was like, hey guys, you guys are going to learn a new sport today. It's called disc golf. This is one of the best players in the world. They're going to teach you. And then that person showcases all the cool things you can do with a Frisbee. Those kids are going to be more likely to, they've seen what is possible. They're going to be more likely to try to attain that and do that. And it's the same thing as growing up. Like we all had our sports idols growing up that we would watch on TV. And then immediately after the basketball game or after the golf tournament or after the tennis match, you'd immediately go out to the court, to the field, to whatever, and like try to replicate what you just saw. You know, one of the things that I vividly remember as a kid is watching Jason Williams, who played for the Sacramento Kings, white chocolate, if you will. I remember watching when he did that elbow pass.
Elbow pass, and yep.
I remember exactly like literally going to the gym immediately after that, like the next day, because I think it was obviously a night game or it might have been during the day on Sunday. But like everyone in the gym was doing that. Everyone was trying to figure out how to do it for like the next several days. And like that is the impact that pros, players, sponsored athletes, that's the big impact that they have on the generation. And I think that really is what disc golf needs to be trying to tap into. We don't need, you know, sure, there is some value in going after like the ultimate frisbee got players that are now a little bit too old to play ultimate frisbee to transition to disc golf. I think that is a very natural transition. Same with golf. Like, hey, you love golfing, but you want to do something that doesn't take 4 or 5 hours every time. Like disc golf, great transition. You go play around in 45 minutes. But there needs to be something about trying to go get the kids, trying to go get those, you know, someone like a Gannon Burr. You know, and Gannon Burr's told his story of where, you know, he was watching my frisbee trick shots, bought a disc golf disc, not knowing it wasn't the same thing I was throwing, and then basically found disc golf through that, fell in love, and look who we have now. Like, those are the stories, and those are the people that we need to be trying to reach and connect with. And if there's ways of getting the youth, I think it's going to be a lot easier using, and I agree with you, if I'm someone that has $500,000, the way I would allocate that money would be, let's sign someone for like $200,000 and then let's use that $400,000 to really blast not only our 200,000 players market and get them out in front of more people, but also use them to get in front of completely new people. Like let's do cool things with this person in front of new people or new eyeballs on social media as well. That I think is going to be, that's going to be huge. That to me would be my marketing plan if I had $500,000.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that's a lot of player off-season movement. The other big thing that obviously a lot of people I think are here to listen to us talk about is the PDGA's announcement yesterday.
Not to cut you off.
Yeah.
Let's actually save that just because I feel like that is going to be a big topic. So let's save that for the end. So that way it's not like we just finished talking about that and then we're like, all right, well, what do you think is a better mid-range? That, you know, like I think I have a few quick things to go over real well,
from your
a
Twitter.
Few from that, but a few other things I just want to talk about real quick. And then let's finish with that. Cause that obviously I want to make sure that we hit all the, cause that's huge. That's like probably the biggest news in PGA's like the last, 5, 10 years, maybe. Like, I mean, that's big stuff. So
yeah,
real quickly, a couple things. Discraft, Slipknot collab. What do you think? What are your thoughts? Did you see that?
I mean, yeah, I did. Slipknot's a big band. So it's cool from that aspect, but I don't know. It's not my demographic. I'm not the one they're marketing towards. So it wasn't for me, but it's cool to see, you know, collabs like that happening in disc golf. I definitely saw a lot of mixed responses in the comments where you had like the people who were stoked that it was happening or like, oh, this is sick. I don't know how well it sold. I'd imagine it sold pretty well. Slipknot's huge. And then you had some people who were just like, yeah, this ain't it. Like, I think it's the younger generation was like, what the heck? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And then you had some of like shops and tournament directors being like, oh, sick collab. Wish you would let me custom stamp some discs. So I saw all kinds of people in the comments. All fair. But yeah, I mean, I think it was a cool collab. I think the discs looked cool, but my
thoughts on it were they like Slipknot shared it to their audience on social, which I think is huge because now you're getting some people to be like, what the heck is disc golf? And maybe dig into it a little bit. I don't know how effective that is of just having someone share a product to buy. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, I just don't know how effective that is. Now, the thing I do know that is very effective is if there was video content created around it And that would be the one thing that I would say like was a little bit of a miss, was not being able to, and I don't know if it was asked, if they were like, hey, can we do something, whatever. And who knows if stuff maybe in the future, but I know that probably would have hit harder and probably would have had a better positive reaction with some people, is if there was like actually them creating content, throwing discs, playing disc golf and sharing that to their audience instead of just their logo or whatever slapped on a disc and being like, hey, here's another disc to sell. But these are the type of collabs and these are the type of things that I do think disc golf needs to be thinking about more, because like we said earlier, disc golf is very small and there's only, you can't just keep punching at the same people over and over and over again. You know, we need to find ways of getting more people involved into disc golf, and doing collabs like this are definitely ways of getting to that point. I just think it was a little bit of a miss just with not having any sort of content with them.
No, absolutely.
Even them holding the disc like in a picture would have been, cool.
Well, because I also did see some comments where people were confused, asking like, oh, this is so cool. Like, do they play disc golf?
Yeah,
like,
two of the seven members. Two of the seven.
Or two of the seven. See, I didn't even know two of them.
I didn't even know there were seven people in Slipknot. I'm learning so much.
I saw the one dude that was like sharing it all over the place and was commenting on everything. I saw him. I knew he had played disc golf. But yeah, I agree. Like, if you would have had like, have them come out and play with Paul or play with you or Chandler Fry or whoever, just play like
them and Chandler Fry would be incredible footage.
Yeah, it's just like quick 9-hole round, promo the disc. It probably would have sold a heck of a lot better, but also it would have just like, it would have reached a different audience SEO wise. You're searching, watching Slipknot content, maybe old concerts or something. There's a chance that just pops up and you're like, what the heck's that?
Yeah,
and you end up watching it.
But these are things that need to happen, though. These are things that need to happen.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Like, again,
these type of collabs are what stretches the sport.
This is in the infancy. That word is so hard for me to say that I'm not.
Infancy.
Yes, thank you. Obviously, companies are still trying to figure out how to make this stuff work, because, again, in the past, I feel like this has been what the past has been. You look at Innova, they have their celebrity team, and they basically just like, I don't really know what they do with the celebrity team. They don't really do much of it. That has kind of been like the past of like, oh yeah, this person's interested, let's do it. Now, obviously Discraft did some good stuff with Ben Askren, right? They created some content around that. We're still, I think, trying to figure out how this works. And I think for some people, like, I guess this would be the question too, is like, if you reached out, let's go big. Let's go like Taylor Swift. If you reached out to like Taylor Swift and she would be like, yeah, I'm down to have you guys put my name on a disc and I'll promote it. If she's willing to just do that, I think we still take that, because I think that is still a win versus like, well, we're only going to want to do that if you do a video. If you're like, if we can just get them to do something, that's still a win versus nothing. And I think obviously there are those negative people that are just always going to be like, what the heck is this? And I get some of the tournament directors and retailers being like, we can't even get this, and yet you're doing this. But again, like, you can't get too mad at what a company's decision is to allocate their resources, right? Like, if they want to allocate their resources to, like you said, like growth and getting their name out there more than for like smaller tournaments and whatnot, can't get too upset about that.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, and I think what you said was right too, of like, something's better than nothing. So like, I think that you definitely push it. Like, if they're like, oh yeah, like, because there are some cases where it's just like a licensing deal. This wasn't that, but like, they've done stuff with Disney before where Discraft's just paying Disney to be able to use the logos, right? And I'm sure that there's athletes and stuff that you could license their logo to use. That I don't think is really worth it if the athlete or whoever's not going to push it. Because if it's just like, the Disney one's worth it for Discraft.
It's worth it for the company making a lot of money. Yes. It's not worth it for getting a bigger name out there.
Correct. But like if LeBron James were to be like, yeah, you know, pay me $100,000 and you can use my King James logo on all your discs, I'm not going to share it though. That doesn't do anything growth of the sport wise. Versus you get someone to share it. I think as long as you're like, hey, like, what can we work together to market this and just like put it out there of like, we will take care of filming everything if you wanted to get a quick round in or just, you know, a quick promo video, whatever. And if they're like, no, like I'll share it to my story, but that's it. That's still worth it.
Yeah.
Now there's some level of celebrity that it's not worth it, but a big time person like Slipknot, definitely still worth it.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes again, like when you're in the disc golf bubble and you see things being posted about and shared on Facebook and Reddit and all this stuff, you're like, holy cow, this is a huge story. Well, it's a huge story for disc golf, but if you're not in the disc golf bubble, none of those things are ever hitting your timeline. You're not seeing any of that stuff ever. And I think that is the strategy moving forward is like, how do we get outside of just the disc golf timeline? We need to be reaching people that never, and I see this too, even on my side sometimes is I'll post like a TikTok. I just did a TikTok with the crazy. I'm sure everyone has seen because it got posted on like not my TikTok, but the clip that I was talking about got posted everywhere. It was like the 60-year-old guy on the beach just doing freestyle, killing it, right? And that ESPN shared sports. Everyone shared Bleacher Report. Everyone shared Barstool. Everyone shared it. And so I finally did like a little like a green screen where I'm like talking about it, yada yada. And that also kind of went semi-viral on TikTok. And like, I was getting people that were like, holy cow, I haven't seen you in forever. Completely forgot about you. Like, oh, I used to watch you all the time as a child. Like I was getting stuff of where they probably still followed me at some aspect somewhere, but like my stuff just wasn't hitting their timeline anymore.
And yeah, the algorithm wasn't pushing.
And that's what we need to be thinking about is like, how do we re-reach some of these people that maybe were in disc golf at one point and then left? Because again, there was tons of people that came in from COVID and left, right? They're not as active probably anymore. How do we re-reach those people? And how do we reach people outside? We got to come up with ways to getting outside the timeline. So
eye-opening experience for me. This is a really quick story because it hit me of like, this is exactly how people view disc golf. It's like, I went out to the field, this Lynchburg College field, and Overthrow, the YouTube channel, was out there doing a video with like these people who like they had like four whippets and they were like throwing frisbees to whippets. The whippets weren't out there, sadly, when I got there. I wanted to see them. But I walked up and I'm like, oh, how's it going? And like shook the hands of these people. And like I was talking to them and they were telling me like what they do, that they have like four whippets, they're frisbee dogs, whatever. And we were talking. I have no idea who they are. It's cool what they do. Then like in the course of conversation, they're like, yeah, we're actually 5-time world champions or something like that. Of like they're multiple time world champions of the frisbee dog world. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And then I like walked away. And I got down, Trevor and I like shot a video and we came back up and they were still there, but they were actually filming. So we didn't talk to them again. And we left, got in our car. And then when we were in the car, I was like, we should look them up. And then Trevor was like, yeah. What was their name? I was like, I don't remember. I have no idea. He's like, I think the guy's name is Gordon. I don't know. And so we like tried find him, couldn't find him. I'm like, I don't know, man. And then I was like, man, this is probably exactly how people feel about like disc golf. Like I walk up and like in the frisbee dog world, they're probably huge.
Yeah.
Right. Like they probably have like a big following. Like everyone probably knows who they are. There's probably people out there that if they knew I got to shake the hand of whoever these people are, would be like, oh my word.
Maybe not the person, but maybe the dog. I'm sure. I think that's probably in the frisbee dog world. I think the dogs are probably more sought after.
Like if I would have met the dogs, it would have been a similar thing. Where I would have petted the dogs and be like, oh, that was cool. Those are some cute dogs. That thing was fast as all, you know, get out. But it wouldn't have meant anything to me because I'm not in that world.
Correct.
I think I was like, that is the first time I've experienced it where like, that's exactly how people have to look at disc golf sometimes. Of like, they could walk down the street, meet Paul or Ricky or whoever and be like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And then just walk right on and be like, yeah, like, I mean, same thing if I met the best cricket player in the world It wouldn't mean anything to me. And the best cricket player in the world is probably one of the more famous athletes in the world, but I've never seen cricket. So that guy doesn't mean anything to me personally.
And it's a lot of it just has to do with culture, right? Like it has to do with like what other people, the popular culture has to like, what their opinions are on things do affect things, right? Like,
yeah,
if you, I'm sure if you met the Kardashians, you probably could care less. Like in the sense of like, you probably aren't like they would not be in your top 10 of people you want to meet.
No, but I would get a picture with them.
But if you got, yeah, you'd get a picture of them and post it because you knew you would know that like meeting them to a lot of people is a big, big deal where on certain things like cricket, like you said, your audience that follows you on Instagram or Twitter, if you took a picture with the world's greatest cricket player, you know that your audience is not going to care either.
No.
But your audience would care or would think like, holy cow, like that's pretty nuts. You got a picture with Kim Kardashian. Like that's wild because Kim Kardashian is this big like celebrity to like, even if you like her or interested or whatever, she still
you know
is
her
a
name
mass,
regardless.
She still is a massive celebrity. Yeah. So no, it is, like I said, like when you get out of the disc golf world or some of these smaller niche sports, when you get out of the world, you really start realizing like, holy cow, like the only people really talking about this is the people in it. And that's, you know, that's why we're here to continue to try to get conversations out there, to try to get stories out there to you guys that are listening. And hopefully you guys share it with a friend or whatever, and they get involved into disc golf and now they start listening and then more people are talking about it. Like we still are missing, you know, I think we do a good job at Foundation. And I think, you know, AltiWorld does a good job as well. We still are missing like, you know, that media company outside of disc golf. We don't have that yet. We don't have anyone that like talks about other sports and stuff. And then also talks about disc golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to take a while to get to that level of where that makes sense. I mean, it's the same thing as like when you turn on SportsCenter, you never see any like MLS action, even though like there's MLS games, because they just know like the audience for MLS is so much smaller than NFL, so much smaller than college sports. And
yeah, they'll use it as filler content if there's
nothing,
else going on. But
All right. Last thing I got. Did you see this Evelina podcast interview that she did?
Yeah, we talked about it on Grip Lock yesterday. I almost brought it up because I wanted to get your opinion on it.
Yes, I do want to talk about this a little bit because I saw this and I thought this was wild. So I think I pulled this. I think someone posted this on Reddit or whatever, like the transcript of it, because it was all in Finnish. But essentially, Evelina went on this Finnish podcast. And during the podcast, this is what kind of was said. So Evelina says FPO layout was announced for the Texas State Championships, but there. And I'm also paraphrasing a little bit, just because I think some of the translation doesn't really match up too well. But there are a couple of these. I don't feel like calling out names. So I think what she was saying is that there was a couple people that were upset with when the Texas State layout initially got announced for FPO. And she's like, I don't want to say the names of the people that got upset. And then Timo, is that how you pronounce it? Do you know Timo? Mm-hmm. Timo.
Yeah.
Timo, who's the host of the podcast, said, you can say names because we are speaking Finnish. I guess
so funny to me.
I guess thinking that no one knew how to translate.
No, he was doing his job. He's on the podcast.
So he was just trying his job. So he knows very, very well that just because you're speaking Finnish, people are going to know. But I guess Evelina fell for the bait.
Their names are in English. Like I went and listened to the podcast because I was like trying to see like.
she literally just says,
and like in the middle, you hear her. She's still like in a Finnish accent, but she just says Missy Gannon and Holly Finley. Like she just says it and then like keeps going to finish. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's the proof I needed. Like I needed to just hear her say it to make sure. Cause I was like, surely she didn't like have a Finnish name for them. Like surely it was just
their name. Yeah. So she goes on to say, okay, Missy Gannon and Holly Finley don't throw far. They went to complain that some of the holes are too long. They were heard in one or two days before the competition, some of the holes were changed to be easier and shorter. I think it's shocking that there can be a few people out there who don't throw that far and are allowed to complain. Their opinions are listened to and the course is changed for the competition. Okay, so a couple things to unpack here. This is what, first off, this is like, we just don't have, I think the reason for a lot of like lack of news, honestly, is just that we don't have one. We don't have, like, when players go on podcasts, when people go on Smashbox, when people go on Alti World, when people do these things, the majority of people answer the same questions and answer them the same way. So they're just boring interviews, just to be completely frank. And I don't know if, I don't know if you're just a boring person. So if you just meet these people in real life, you're like, that person's just boring, which is completely fine. Nothing wrong with a boring person. But it just doesn't really add, like, no one really wants to say, be like, oh my God, did you just see blah, blah, blah on Smashbox last night? Or did you just see blah, blah, blah on Trevor Staub's show? Like, I can't believe they said that. That's one problem. And I think the other problem too is on the podcast side of things is like the questions that are being asked probably aren't really maybe putting people in spots to have to throw interesting answers out. So it's like a two-way street, right? Like, and I don't know who's at fault. Sometimes it's this person, sometimes it's this person. And then the other thing is we just don't have people on social media ever saying what they think. Like everyone on social media is just very vanilla bland. Buy this disc, subscribe to my YouTube channel, watch this, listen to this. That was cool. Awesome. Happy for you. Great. And there's not really any sort of opinions on, oh my God, did you just hear what this person said? Or did you happen to hear? Disc golf is missing that. And again, I don't know. I can say it until I'm blue in the face. I don't know what needs to change. I don't know what needs to happen. But like stuff like this, I'm going to tell you right now, this Evelyn is not the only person that has a thought that is interesting. She can't be. There's no way she can be the only person on FPO or MPO that ever says something that is like, oh, wow, that's something to talk about. We need more people. And I think the fans need more people to speak their mind on issues and actually like bring up when you see something written or when you see something posted. Heck, I even did it on our post and then I got blasted for it. But like that's, you know, when you guys posted the foundation thing, I was like, this is awkward. And then you're like, didn't want to show your first throw. And then I just hit first available. I deserved it. That's what I get. But like,
I don't think that was actually your first throw. I gotta ask Trevor about that.
But that's fine.
It was funny.
It was definitely fun. I definitely deserve. I mean, that was the perfect response to it. But like, that's, we need to have people. If you see something out there that you don't agree with, it doesn't have to always be super negative. Like you don't always have to come out and like have negative opinions towards things. But if you see something that you don't, I mean, Drew Gibson, I think, is someone that pops out as someone that does that. Now, some of his takes are just absolutely atrocious. But again, that's fine. I have sometimes
that's better than no takes.
And sometimes I come out with stuff that I'm like, just like, what was I thinking? Like I come out with stuff all the time that is just like absolutely atrocious takes. But it's better than, like you said, just being vanilla brand. So let's talk about this. That was my quick little player rant for the maybe one or two pros. And maybe we clip this, Silas, maybe we clip that and let me blast that out. So that way, maybe some other people see it on social media, because this is a calling for like, let's not make disc golf super boring. And again, like we're not trying to be the TMZ of disc golf. We're not trying to turn this into wrestling and it needs to be a crazy sideshow, but let's get some personalities out there. I honestly, after reading this about Evelina, like this makes me like Evelina more. Like now when I think of Evelina, I don't think of her missing 6-foot putts. I think of her being willing to go out there and say like, listen, like, why do we have people that can't throw far? Why are they being able to impact the courses that we play? Like these are things that I don't know. I just think, and you have to be okay with, you know, you have to be okay as a player. You have to be okay with speaking your mind and understanding that sometimes not everyone's going to agree with you. And that's okay. There are, I'm sure there are dozens and dozens of people that have heard me say things that are like, what the heck, Brody? That was stupid. And if they hear one thing and decide like, I'm not a Brody fan because he said this one thing, then they weren't really a fan to begin with. Like they had like being following me, you have to realize that I'm going to say stupid things. And I'm going to say smart things and you have to call me out on my stupid things and I'll own up to it. We cannot be afraid of hurting someone's feelings or losing a fan because we say what's on our mind. Yep. I want to say hats off to Evelina for doing this. And I think initially she probably wasn't thinking that it was going to get out there like it is now. But I think this is a good thing. What is your take on it? Before we go into actually what she actually said, what's your take on kind of all that of just pros saying what's on their mind?
I think a big part of it comes from like it's still such a tight-knit community between media, players, all of that. Like it's a lot more than other sports where like if I'm J.R. Smith and I come out and say something about Luka Doncic,
I'm not gonna go see him
next weekend. I'm gonna see him like twice a season. Or if a reporter asks me an uncomfortable question, I'm not going to randomly see this reporter at dinner and then at the next weekend and the next, I'm not going to have to see this guy every single day. Like right now, disc golf media and disc golf players are all very like combined to where like, if you go back a few years, the only interview podcast was Smashbox and Smashbox is doing the live coverage to where Terry Miller was interviewing these players. And then sometimes like 2 days later was holding a camera and walking with their car doing commentary. And like, he couldn't come after a player and like have an awkward interaction and then have to, you know, be in a like that scenario where he's like with their card having to interview him a few days later. We're getting away from that now. I think of the flip side, the other side to this as well is as disc golf gets bigger, more players can be comfortable risking a fan base, if that makes sense. Not that like, because I think a lot of times right now, a lot of players' income is based directly on sales.
Yes.
It's based directly on, you know, how many discs with their name they move.
Yes.
So you have to worry about not being popular. You have to worry about your takes being too hot or, you know, because some takes are just not going to be popular. And that's okay. You know, if that's what you think, that's what you think. It doesn't have to be a popular take. But if your income is directly based on your tour series sales and you come out and say something that makes your tour series sales dump, you out of nowhere just don't have income coming in for a lot of players. And I think that's kind of like, that's also going away as guaranteed money comes in. But I think that that's still like a mindset for a lot of players is like, I can't say that. Like some people aren't going to like it. I need everyone to like me. And it's like, the only way you get everyone to like you is if you're not you.
Yeah.
People aren't going to like you.
Yeah. Two things to say on that. The first one, like what you just said, you have to make the decision. Do I want to make $50,000 and be myself or make $150,000 and be a fake phony and someone else? And then here's the other problem. Yeah. If you become that fake phony and you want to go that route, you now have to be that fake phony for a while. And then all of a sudden, when you do decide like, oh, I'm big enough now to where I can be myself and I can say what I want. Now everyone can be like, well, you were just faking it this whole, like, that's not who you are.
You're going to lose way more fans that way.
You got to make that decision. And then the other thing too, just from a little bit of experience, it's completely fine with just deciding that you don't like someone on tour and not wanting to talk to them.
Yeah.
It's completely fine. It doesn't change anything. And I don't think that should be something pros should be concerned about. I'm sure they are, but my take too is like, if a pro did come after me, which there has been a lot of, I would say, behind the back kind of stabs and stuff of that nature. If someone came out to me on Twitter and just disagreed with something and was just blatant about it, and it was like a fair like rebuttal or fair critique to something I was doing, I wouldn't call that person dead to me. Like, I would actually probably have more respect that they were willing to have that discussion at least, or like bring up a secondary opinion that maybe I hadn't even thought of. Whether they didn't want to do that online or in person, it doesn't really matter to me. The stuff that bothers me is when someone like brings up something that like has to do not with like what I'm saying or whatever, but you know, there was some of that stuff early on with like Jamie Thomas, like some of the stuff he was saying early on where I was just like, bro, what, like I'll come after that all day long. But if I say something, you know, we're about to go into a very deep talk topic here. And, you know, we're going to maybe say some things that people disagree with. Those are conversations that I'm completely fine with having. If you disagree with my opinions and stuff, that's completely fine. So we'll leave it at that. Silas, maybe we can clip that whole, that little rant I had, that, you know, 45-second rant I had, blast that out. And maybe we'll get some more pros talking their mind in 2023 in some of these interviews, because let's be honest, these player interviews, I mean, how many people are paying attention to those things? It just seemed like you maybe would get one nugget out of an entire 2-hour interview stream of where like you might get one person to say something interesting. Other than that, it's like, yeah, game feels pretty good. You know, this course, a lot of OB going to have to throw. I mean, come on. So
well, I think the key with that is like there's one time where I remember Nico came after the haters, the keyboard warriors is what he called
at
them.
At Waco, yeah.
And that thing blew up. And I think the key is like, it's the media's responsibility to watch the boring mumbo jumbo part of game feels good, you know, same thing every week. That happens in other sports where it's like the same answers over and over. So that when the one viral answer happens, that can get pushed. And then your average fan who's never going to watch the post game press conference sees that moment. And then that is what like blows up. And that also, I think moments like that can have outside disc golf reach too. I'm not saying that everything has to be this like drama filled, hate filled thing, but like when there is a like Nico's viral moment, had it been pushed a little bit more, it would have to have luck. But Nico's moment of the keyboard warriors, you know,
well, I would say his moment of push of going up against a European guy too. That would, to me, that would have more of a sports like watcher. Would be like, oh my God, did you see what happened in disc golf? Versus
happen to me where time, like stuff from press conferences or post game things or just a player's life from a sport I don't watch will pop up on my timeline. And so like for instance, Paddy the Batty, you know, the only reason I know anything about him is how much content and stuff Barstool puts out around him, but also the dude's just electric. So like I'm way more likely to watch a UFC fight if Paddy's fighting. Same thing with Conor McGregor.
I will heavily debate you. I know we're not going to go into UFC right now, but I have heavily debate you on that because he's done some things the last couple days that has, in my opinion, like has dropped his stock. But here's the thing. I'm still going to tune in because now I want to see him get knocked out.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the last few days.
Well, he's been, okay.
I've just seen.
You've seen the good stuff.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
You've seen the good stuff.
I'm outside of the sport, so I only see what makes it to my timeline, and that's the viral moments that are like the same. The who does the shoey after he wins?
Tua Tavasa.
Like that makes it to my timeline.
Yep.
That's the type of stuff that makes it, and like that's a good thing. Like there's nothing wrong with what he does, and like that's electric. That's the type of stuff that has outside the sport reach.
And here's the thing: why do people tune in to watch sports?
It's entertainment.
And a form of entertainment is drama. Like drama is not always, oh my God, I started dating this person and then this person just came in and started they stole my boy. Like that is not what, like, and that sells, right? There's tons of Netflix shows now that is what they're selling. That is not necessarily all that drama has to be, is like this relationship stuff. Drama can be two people that don't like each other because of X, Y, and Z. And they could not like each other because they just are both number one in the world and number two in the world. Like that's what we were getting with Ricky and Paul. There really wasn't anything that was done between the two. It wasn't like someone said something really nasty about the other's girlfriend or mom, or like there wasn't any of that. It was simply this: Paul and Ricky were way better than everyone else, and so they just were head to head all the time, and that created a lot of drama, and that worked. There are different ways of creating drama that is interesting for people to tune in, but that is why people tune in. People would not tune in to watch NFL on Sunday like they did if every time a play ended, everyone was shaking hands and being super friendly. And they knew that they didn't care one way or the other who won because they're friends with everyone. Like, that is not interesting. That is just not something. And that's something that, like, in the fight game, we were just on UFC, that's something in the fight game that they constantly are trying to deal with sometimes, of where, like, there are two people that are, like, super friendly, but leading up to the fight, if you don't know that there's, like, if you're not super deep and close with them, you wouldn't know. You would think they hate each other, but they're trying to sell the fight. I don't think we have to do that. Like, we don't have to go that far in disc golf to try to sell, but there are things that we can be doing differently, of where we can just let our personalities come out that creates natural drama to where it would get people more interested in watching these tournaments than simply, you know, like, to me, like, the skins matches, not my cup of tea, simply because it is just a very friendly kind of thing of where they're trying to make it competitive. But at the same time, a lot of people on there are just super friendly, at least for some of the stuff I've seen. Not my cup of tea. Obviously, a lot of people enjoy and watch that, but we need to be okay with maybe saying some things that not everyone's going to be okay with.
Well, example.
I was going to say,
perfect example.
Transition in.
Well, we'll transition into this in a second, but the perfect example is Nico LaCastro better be on a feature card at the Las Vegas Challenge.
Oh, 100%. He better be filmed.
If he's not on a feature card at Las Vegas Challenge, it's a huge missed opportunity.
Huge miss.
He better be on the live feature card because, like, people are going to pay to watch Disc Golf Network to see Nico's return to disc golf at the Las Vegas Challenge. Like, that's the storyline going into the year. So, like, you better put him on there.
Yeah.
And you better put him on there with, like, if I'm the Pro Tour, I'm picking some people that I know are, like, pot stirrers that are, like, willing to call some rules and be like, let's get this thing going. You know what I mean? Like, let's put them all out there to at least be able to pre-event have a marketability. Like, this is your feature card. These are the four that you're going to be able to watch play together. And, like, you're probably going to have subscriptions skyrocket. Because, like, that's the story. That's the thing.
That is one of the big stories for sure going into the season is how is Nico going to be with his time off? You know, like, is he a changed man? Is he going to be doing things differently on the course like he says he's going to? Or is he going to kind of fall back into, what we all thought Nico was to begin with? So, yeah, we'll see. Like, that's a great point of, like, you know, with the feature cards and stuff, there are things that the Pro Tour definitely can do to kind of line up. And again, it's like you said, it's like that. Sure. Are there going to be some people out there that disagree with us on that point and be like, well, we shouldn't be rewarding Nico for his bad behavior? Sure. There are going to be certain people like that. I would say there's so many people that want to see it though. There are so many people that want to see Nico, and I'm just going to throw, like, someone like a Jordan Castro, someone that is going to call every rule by the book. Like, they want to see what happens. And at the end of the day, like, this is an entertainment business. Like, if you are the Disc Golf Pro Tour, you are in the entertainment business. So make it entertaining, as much entertainment as you can. And having four guys that are all friends and all saying good shot, giving high fives and all that after every single shot, to the general sports fan, is boring. I'm just going to say it.
My feature card would be Paul McBeth, Ricky Wysocki, Drew Gibson, Nico LaCastro.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That would be my four.
That's a good one. That's a very solid one.
Yeah. All right. Let's roll into the PDGA had an announcement yesterday. The board of directors released a statement on the update to policy on eligibility for gender-based divisions, which we knew this announcement was coming. We knew that there was going to be a change in January 1st. We had no idea what the change was going to be. Obviously, you know, going back across you know, we had this conversation back middle of the season, some, I think, as Natalie Ryan began to win, it got pushed to the forefront a lot more. This survey got released out. It seems like they somewhat used the survey. We actually can see some of the results of the survey on here. But to give a brief overview, I'm gonna just read on the actual eligibility update. And then I think we can get into some of the, like, why they made this decision. So for PDGA amateur majors, pro master majors, and all other PDGA events sanctioned A tier level and below, the requirements regarding a player's level of testosterone have been lowered from under 10 NMOL. I'm guess I'm just call that NMOL. I don't really know what that is, per liter for 1 year, to under 2 NMOL per liter for 2 years. Players are only eligible to compete in gender-based FPO division at PDGA Pro Majors, Champions Cup, USWDGC, European Open, and Pro Worlds, if they begin a medical transition during Tanner Stage 2 or before age 12, whichever is later. The player must also continuously maintain a total testosterone level in the serum below 2 NMOL per liter. Organizations which are specifically designated by the PDGA under the terms of an explicit agreement to run Elite Series Tours, the Pro Tour, may use any set or subset of the eligibility criteria above at their events. Application of the chosen criteria must comport terms with agreement PDGA. The Pro Tour has come out and they are sticking to the major one. So the Pro Tour will implement the same eligibility criteria regarding gender-based divisions approved by the PDGA for PDGA Pro Majors to all disc golf Pro Tour events, including silver events. It'll be effective January 1st, 2023. So essentially for all FPO Pro Tour events and majors.
Break that down as I'm a fifth grader.
Yeah, so all FPO divisions for the Pro Tour, Silver Series, and majors, if they began medical transition during Tanner Stage 2, which is a stage of puberty, or before the age of 12, so realistically, age of 12,
is the whichever is later. That'd be the latest.
Yeah, age of 12 more than likely is the line. So no matter what, before age of 12, if they began, they're only eligible to compete if they began the transition before the age of 12. They must also continually maintain a testosterone level below 2.0. So more or less, for the current players on tour, Natalie Ryan will not be able to play in Pro Tour events or majors next season is the direct effect. Also, I believe Chloe Alice also will not be able to.
And then there was that
direct effect. There was with this.
The person that won Masters, right? There was another.
I forget her last name, Laura.
Oh gosh, I'm blanking on it.
She's on the board of directors.
Not on the Pro Tour, but still someone that would not be able to compete in the tournaments, right? That or no?
Well, Pro Masters Majors has a different requirement.
Oh, okay.
So they are just strictly the testosterone level. It's been lowered from under 10 to under 2.
Okay, so like
I don't know what range that means. I don't know.
Let's just stick to talking to the Pro Tour because I think that's what people want to hear about more than.
Yeah. I do want to just question because like they have a lot of science up here of like different studies they went to and all of this as to why they made this decision. And the reports from, and like we can read some of the quotes if we want, but the reports basically show why they made this decision, why they feel like it's an advantage. So to me, like, if the science showed it's an advantage, why are we having two different, why is there two different eligibilities?
Yeah, like why if the science, I agree with what you're saying. If the science is showing there's an advantage, like why can you benefit it if you're in this division or playing these tournaments, but you can't in these tournaments? That doesn't make sense to me. Yeah.
Like, cause like it, if we need to be strict on FPO at Pro Worlds, all that, and a Pro Tour, why is it not strict at AM Majors and Pro Master Majors and FPO events at A tier level and below? Like that one didn't make sense to me. That one felt like a little bit of conflicting information.
That might be, is that their way of being like, hey, we'll throw you a bone. Like we're not going to, I don't know. Was that their thought process then? Because like, yeah, it makes no sense. Like if there's an advantage, then clearly across the board, you should be like, we're not allowing this because there's an unfair advantage here, but I don't know. We'll stick to just talking with the Pro Tour stuff. Cause I think that is obviously the more top, like the bigger story here is you have someone in Natalie Ryan that won, I believe, twice. I believe she won two events. Could have been four events, I think. You know, she almost won OTB.
She was in contention a lot, yes.
So you have someone that was a top player on the FPO Tour last year that will not be playing on the FPO Tour this year, not because of her decision, but because of a change in the rules. I mean, that correct. Right there is the big story from this whole this whole situation. It looks like they are. I saw that this was essentially the same thing that the Swimming Federation came out with.
Yes.
It's basically the same kind of
similar.
Like thought process of like why they're changing the rules and stuff was very similar to what swimming did as well.
The PDGA's article quotes this report here. I'll just read this whole thing because this is the science behind what they're, you know, all their year of study, however long it was. This is kind of what they came up with in the end. So this is where it starts here. Some researchers contended the outdated IOC guidelines based chiefly on testosterone levels failed to provide a level playing field for female competitors. For example, Hilton and Lundberg, 2021, noted that with regard to transgender women athletes, we question whether current circulating testosterone level cutoff can be a meaningful, decisive factor when, in fact, not even suppression down to around 1 mmol per liter removes the anthropometric and muscle mass / strength advantage in any significant way, page 211. General support for roughly 5% reduction in strength after a year of testosterone suppression has been reported, and then it has a bunch of studies where that's reported. This 5% reduction may continue in subsequent years, although it's unlikely. This initial reduction in strength may be offset by transgender women maintaining irreversible advantages in anthropometric measures and in biomechanical benefits afforded by these anthropometrics. Farther study may help to quantify these legacy advantages. The paper goes on to say that the opinion of Schreier, 2022, regarding the biological advantages afforded by men is supported by science and is worthy of consideration. Effects of male puberty are profound and they are permanent. Most fast twitch muscle fibers, greater upper body muscle mass, greater lower body muscle mass, greater bone density, they grant men a significant and unbridgeable advantage over women in nearly every physical contest. Even if a man later takes estrogen and artificially reduces the level of bioactive testosterone in his body, he will not surrender these advantages. This stance is supported by anthropometric data and basic principles of biomechanics. It is also in agreement with the Internal Federation of Sports Medicine consensus statement that trans women have the right to compete in sports. However, cisgender women have the right to compete in a protected category. The report concludes, it is impossible to establish policies that are both inclusive and fair. In terms of fairness, no transgender person should ever be excluded. Thus, while it would be unfair to transgender women to compete against cisgender women, there would be no question of unfairness if transgender men or transgender women were to compete in the mixed divisions at any amateur or pro level or in any age-protected divisions that they qualify for. And then it basically shows the subcommittee's voting on the different questions at hand. So that's kind of what the report said. More or less, from my point of view, we've said this. This has been my stance on it the whole time. Was I wanted the decision to be based on whatever science said. So wherever they felt like the advantage was reduced, whatever advantage there was, they needed to just use science and go with it. Because no matter what decision was made here, someone was upset. If you look at the survey that went out, this was fascinating to me. 80% of Disc Golf Pro Tour women responded that they either strongly disagreed or disagreed to transgender women should be allowed to compete with other women in disc golf and in other sports. 80% disagreed with that, which was way higher than I would have expected because like they were silent on it all year.
I mean, that again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about of especially on a topic like this, if you're trying to sell your disc, do you want to come out and say like, I think it's unfair that transgender women are playing in my division? Like, it goes exactly hand in hand with what we talked about. It's a lot different when you are making hundreds of thousands of dollars by just winning tournaments or playing in tournaments that you can then be like, you can come out and be a lot more vocal. But if your sole livelihood is on people buying your disc, something like that is a tough thing to just come out and say what you have to say.
Yeah. But so basically what that shows though is like, if they made the decision, you know, just based on gut feeling or whatever, if they just made one decision, one side, you have 80% mm-hmm. of the field upset with you. The other decision, the side that we're on now, you have a Pro Tour champion and a few other women in the field and also future players in the field upset and feel like they're being targeted. So the only way to do this is you have to just push all opinions aside and just look at the science. And from the outside looking in, you heard me pronounce these words. I clearly don't understand what a lot of it said.
It sounded,
from what I was reading, it sounded pretty straightforward. Yes. That like there is a clear advantage, and this is the guidelines that they feel minimize that advantage. Because essentially, what it sounded like is, if you go through puberty as a man, still, then or as a biologically male, if you go through puberty, there are irreversible advantages that happen. And so it seemed like that's the line that the PDGA felt like the science pointed to. That's where the line needs to be set. And that's where the PDGA set the line. I would also hope that if science comes out down the line that provides deeper insight into this, and the PDGA realizes that this decision was wrong, that they would, in tune with this, be willing to change it.
Or if pill or something else is created that can take the advantages that they are claiming. If you go through puberty, you have, if there's something that equals the playing field or whatever, then yeah, that's something that then it's like, okay, we need to reopen this case, if you will, and look at to see if we need to change something up.
Yeah. And I would hope the PDGA would do that. Cause like, to me, from the outside looking in, this is what I wanted the PDGA to do, was look at the science, provide us with the information of what their research found, and then just make a decision based solely on the research. I didn't really like that they did a survey, and it doesn't seem like the survey had any weight on it, because like what I didn't want is like the science to show this, but then the survey show this, and they're like who's to say that? Luckily, we have the science data they showed us, but like if we didn't, and all we had was the survey data, you could easily see where people would be like, well, of course they made this decision. 80%. Of Pro Tour women, 67% of all members, 68% of professional women, 55% of amateur women all disagreed with it. They had to go with the popular majority. And like, that's not what the decision should have ever mm-hmm. been based on. So I agreed with a lot of people of like, why are you even sending the survey out? You know, that shouldn't have any weight on your decision. And hopefully it didn't have that much weight on their decision. It doesn't seem to have.
That might have been something to make, this is like a player's kind of, a player's comp. I don't know what the right word of saying it, but like this is, it's where like the players should have, the people that are members should have say and stuff. Obviously, we both agree that the say in this situation should be more science and not what people feel. But I think they probably were like, if we send a survey out and have everyone give their 2 cents, then maybe they'll feel better about our decision, because we were like, well, we did give you a chance to say your piece. I do want to hopefully say some things that everyone can agree on. When sports were created, they decided that they wanted to make divisions so that way there could be a fair form of competition within divisions. And if we're looking just on disc golf side, the division was created for open, in the sense of like anyone can play, but obviously the open is majority men. And then you have the female, the women's division, right? You have these two divisions that were created so that way the FPO can all play together and compete, and then MPO can all play together and compete. Same thing as why MA1, MA2, MA3, those divisions are created, because if you just have all one big amateur division, there are going to be some people that just do not have the genetics, do not have the skill level, do not have the time, do not have all these factors that go into being good at disc golf to be able to compete with everyone in the amateur division. So now they are in the MA3 division, or it's still MA3, right? Yeah. They are now in the MA3.
It's no longer a rec.
They're in the MA3 division, and they can compete, and they can be and have that feeling of like, I'm coming down to the wire to try to win this thing. That is why divisions were created. Now, I think we all can agree too that you, me, people listening to this, we were all not created equally. Some of us have more skills. Some of us have the genetics to be better at certain sports than others. There are different things. And also we were raised differently to where some people have advantages here and disadvantages here. So I'm never going to be like, well, it's not fair. I can't play in the NBA. Because I realize I just do not have the genetics to be able to play in the NBA that some other people do. And it was just the run of the draw or the luck of the draw, right? I'm now making the best that I can in the sports that I can compete at with what I was given. Some people are super smart. And I also can't look at those people and be like, dang, I really wish that I was as eloquent as they were with their words. Like, some people are just better in certain things than others. And obviously, we can get better at certain stuff by being in those things more and by putting more time there. But the notion of, like, at the end of the day, this all came down to, do people have certain advantages that other people weren't even able to have? And if so, why are we allowing those people to compete in the same division? That's, I mean, that is ultimately what it is like, it's the same, what it sounds like is it's the same thing as like someone that transitioned later in life has an advantage over the FPO division, the same as me having an advantage over the MA2 division. Like, I'm not allowed to compete in MA2 because my skill level, my advantages that I was able to have is higher than those people in MA2. It sounds like it's the same thing as like there are just genetic things that like a seven foot tall person might not have nearly as much skill in shooting as dribbling, hand eye, whatever as I do. But if I'm 5'10", I'm probably not going to go play Division I basketball. But that 7-footer is. And that is just, it is what it is. And I just think this decision that they made for those FPO players that really felt this way of like, you know, being able to play with someone and being able to see like, wow, they just have something that is a huge advantage that we do not have. Like, this is, like we said, this is something that is making it a more fair playing field. That is what I'm all for. If the science is showing that someone has a bigger advantage because they were born a male instead of a female, we created divisions because we all agree that men have a better advantage than women. I don't think that was ever discussed, right? Like, that was never...
Yeah,
it doesn't take look at literally any sport going down the row. If it's strength based, if it's speed based, testosterone in men give men more an advantage over women. The science was always, is there something that you can do to block, prohibit, reduce? Is there something that you can take that advantage that you were given at birth to make it fair? And clearly what the science has shown is no. Right? Like, yeah, that's, the at the end of the day, that's not a debate. Like, if you were debating that men and women are equal on like speed, strength, if you're debating that, then we can't have this discussion. But if we can all agree that men have a leg up just because of just the testosterone and other, you can go and look at all science behind it. If there's not something that we can do to bring them back down to this, then there's nothing that, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. That's the thing, right?
Like, it's a lose-lose situation for the PDGA, because on the flip side of that coin, you have to feel awful for, I mean, we'll just, Natalie Ryan is the prime example.
She was the one,
she had a budding career. Yeah. She had a budding career, multiple time pro tour champion, you know, is lined up to have a great 2023 season. And like, I don't know what she's going to do next year. You know, like, realistically, yes, she's allowed in the open division, but also it's pretty obvious that, you know, she's be at a disadvantage in the open division because of the testosterone blockers and all that. That's not a, that's not a sports decision that was made. That wasn't a decision made for sports. And so, like, you know, that's not something that's like, oh, simple answer, I'll just go back. Like, that's not how that works at all. So, like, she's at a clear disadvantage in MPO, and the PDGA is now saying she's at a clear advantage in FPO. So in a lot of ways, yeah, this is very, if I was Natalie Ryan, I would feel like this is very unfair to me, because in a lot of ways it is, but that PDGA is trying to make the decision that's the most fair for
the field,
the divisions, yes, as a whole. And this is the line that they set. And yeah, it sucks for Natalie Ryan. It absolutely sucks. There's no way around that fact. And that's why for the PDGA, it was a lose-lose situation, as it seems. And like they set the line, you know, before the age of 12. I mean, from my understanding, that is effectively banning transgender women from FPO. From my understanding, like age of 12, very, very rarely does a transition happen before that. And so from all intents and purposes, this is essentially banning transgender women from FPO. And I also, from what I've seen in different comments on Old Sea World and on Natalie Ryan's Instagram, I believe that she is opening or looking into a possible lawsuit.
I did see that.
Against the PDGA. So I don't believe this is the last we're going to hear of this. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the lawsuit. I don't know the legality of, you know,
yeah, is there a case
how much
here?
Like the PDGA, yeah, is a private a organization, yeah, or I have no idea. You would imagine, you know, this is the same thing swimming went through to a certain extent. I don't know where the swimming line was set, but swimming made a similar decision earlier. You would imagine they were met with similar backlash. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes of it all. But yeah, I hope at least in the disc golf community that the same inclusion and everything that's been preached the whole time isn't just gone with this decision. I hope that, you know, Natalie Ryan, other transgender women are still feel welcomed on the disc golf course. I know that's a lot harder for it to happen now because of this decision, but I hope they still feel welcomed in the sport.
So she can still play. A lot of players can still play in, like, what events can she still play in?
So it depends on the testosterone level, because I don't know what under
okay,
two.
Okay, so let's assume that she's under two.
Is. If she's under that, then A tier level and below FPO events.
Okay, so she can still play in A tier and women, all those events. Okay.
And that'd be it. Throw pink women and then just local A tier, okay, B tier, C tier events. But yeah, I mean, hopefully like the disc golf sport is still accepting, but obviously it's just not going to be the same. And I would also hope that the same thing, you know, that we've said the whole time, like there's no room at all for hate to be spewed towards Natalie, yes, Ryan or towards anyone else. Like there's room for healthy discussion.
And
hopefully on our podcasts and channels, we've always, yes, encouraged that, but there's no room for hatred one way or the other. The PDGA was in a very, very tough spot here. From what I'm reading, I think that they did the right thing. They used science to make their decision, and this is the line that they felt was right to set. But if you disagree with that decision, the same thing I've encouraged everyone to do who disagree with the previous decision, reach out to the PDGA. If you have evidence stating otherwise as to why their decision isn't fair, maybe they just missed it. Share it with them. I think that is the absolute best thing to do if you disagree with this decision. And if you agree with the decision, feel free to reach out to the PDGA on the flip side of that coin and let them know.
Yeah, you bring up a great...
It was a tough
one. You bring up
a
great point with Natalie Ryan's situation that I don't think maybe a lot many people have thought of. And I actually didn't even think about... I mean, I think maybe I've thought about it in the past, but not right now. Is she is in such a tough spot because obviously, yes, she was putting her life in her career headed towards this disc golf. I think she did know, probably she had to have known going into it that this was a risk, that this could ultimately end up happening, because the PDGA had yet to make a stance on the issue and it was getting brought up more. But your point on the fact that she is doing something that is essentially now making, she's basically doing something, right? Like by taking the blockers, and I don't know all the science that goes into what you know, what pills or chemicals or whatever it is that you're taking to reduce the testosterone levels. I don't know all that, but you are essentially doing something that is making your body function not as well. Is that, I don't know if that's the I don't know if that's a good way.
In an athletic sense.
I don't know. I don't want to say something that is misconstrued, but you're trying to lower yourself. And this is obviously what we were talking about before, that there is an advantage being a male versus a female in athletics. So you're doing something to try to make that advantage go down, but you weren't able to make it go down far enough to make it fair. But now you have just gone, you've just given yourself a disadvantage
against
people that aren't taking that stuff. And you know, we don't know, you know, I'll be honest in saying, like, watching her skill level, she is far from being able to compete on the MPO side of things. Literally every FPO player right now, I don't think I'm crazy going out and saying that. I think you have some players like a Paige, Kristen Tatar, Katrina, Evelina. You have some of the top FPO players that on certain courses and on certain weekends could compete at potentially cashing on the MPO side if they, you know, if they play really, really well. But there is obviously a skill gap and kind of going, I think we almost kind of completely just went over the Holly Finley, Missy Gannon call out with Evelina. We didn't really talk too much about what she was really saying, and the fact of saying, like, these Missy Gannon and Holly Finley simply saw the layout from Texas State's, now we're going back to it, and was like, these holes are too far for me, so this is unfair. And then they ended up changing the holes, right? So, like, if there are people on FPO that there's FPO layouts that are too far, when you go to MPO, there's certain holes that are just even further. So the divide there is going to be much. So going back to Natalie Ryan, she's in a weird spot because she's not going to be able to just be like, oh, okay, well, I'll just play MPO. That's not going to work. We'll see what ends up happening. It does seem like, you said, she is going to fight this. To what extent, I don't know. This is one that I think right now is going to be tough for a lot of people, but I think the decision to make it a fair playing field is the right decision for the long term, because that's just gotta be so tough. I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of some of the FPO players. And it's one thing if I am because Holly Finley and Evelina, we were just brought up. Let's say if I am Holly Finley and I see someone like an Evelina, right? That gap, I guess, between me and Evelina, like, I can say, like, is there things I can do to make that gap smaller? Right? Like, can I get in the gym? Can I work on explosion? Can I work on speed? Is there stuff that I can do to try to make that gap smaller? That is easier for me to grasp than if I'm an FPO player and if I'm Holly Finley and I'm looking at a Drew Gibson. Like, yeah. That gap now is like, sure, there are some things I can make up, but they are just on a completely different level. And it's like, there are certain things that I will just never be able to get there. And I don't know if this point really makes sense, because, like, if I compare myself to LeBron James, right? Like, genetically, he just got a way better hand in genetics. But if I really trained the way that he trained for the stuff that he did his entire life, that gap would be smaller, right? But still, I don't know. I guess there is still some of that even in your your gender, right? There's still some of that where it's like, oh, well, that's not fair. Like, that's LeBron James, that's Kevin Durant, that's Usain Bolt. Like, that's not fair. Like, there is some of that already in your gender. I just think when you have something coming over that already has these See, that's where I'm having a hard time, because I feel like I'm contradicting myself. I feel like I'm contradicting myself. Right?
So what you're going into right now is the main argument that is being used to counter this, which is essentially like, yes, like, okay, we understand the advantages there, but just like you just said, LeBron James has an advantage over you that you will never be able to attain, you know? And at the end of the day, it's just like, all you can use, at least in my understanding, all you can use is the science of like, LeBron James is not the average, right? LeBron James is a far top 1% outlier. And so I think that from what I understand is like what this science is trying to look at is like the average to the average, because you have Brittany Griner's of the world, right? Hot topic right now of her coming back to the US, but in WNBA, you have players like that are the LeBron James of the WNBA, right? To a certain extent where like most women will never be able to dunk, and you have Brittany Griner being able to dunk and stuff like that, to where like that is just an advantage. So you can't look at like the outlier to the outlier, because if you take Brittany Griner and you put her up against me, just like an average or below average dude, I'm not gonna be able to beat
Brittany Griner.
Yeah. I'm getting dunked on all the time. I'm probably not getting a point up, you know what I'm saying? But you can't take the outlier to the outlier, you gotta take the average to the average. And I think that's what I was getting tripped up on. Here, but what you,
because I was like, wait a second, I'm like,
but that's the big argument, and that is something that I'm hoping the PDGA heard and at least looked into as well, is like, that is the big argument that's being used, is like what you just said, is, you know, would it be unfair on the FPO side? We'll use Brittany Griner again, I just used her. Would it be unfair if Brittany Griner picked up disc golf and came into the sport? And like, yeah, there are some things where like, we'll use Holly Finley because you use her. She might look at Brittany Griner and be like, I just cannot do that. Like, there, like if I watch LeBron James pick up any sport, I would watch him and be like, no matter what I do, I'm never going to be able to physically do what LeBron James just did. And that is the big argument that's being used to counter this.
Well, that makes more sense. Cause I was just throwing myself in I was throwing myself in a pretzel where I was like,
that's why I'm very glad that I'm not the PDGA. I'm very glad that this was not a decision that had to come on my desk, because in a lot of ways, like, I think that what they did was the right decision, but there was no right answer. Someone loses in every scenario. And that's like the worst scenario to be in in any scenario in life, is where like, I'm a people pleaser in a lot of ways. A lot of times it's a flaw. But like, there's a lot of scenarios where you get into where you're not going to please everyone. And like having to have that come across your desk, and you're like, man, like this, no matter what decision I make, it's affecting the livelihood of someone. Cause it's not even just like affecting like people's happiness or joy. Like, it's affecting people's revenue, bottom line, livelihood, both ways. And so like in this decision, like Natalie Ryan, she might have to find a new career next season. Realistically, like that's a very real possibility of like, if, you know, the lawsuit or whatever ends up coming out of this doesn't go through, doesn't play out in Natalie Ryan's favor, come the Las Vegas Challenge, it's hard to know what is she going to do? Because like you were saying, like, it's going to be very, very tough to make it on the MPO tour.
Her ratings not even high enough to get into events.
Yeah. It's a very big question. And I also will say, I've seen Natalie Ryan post several times, and I fully understand where this feels like a personal attack, because she's right in a lot of ways. This wasn't nearly as big of a deal.
She made it by winning. And that's what we always said.
Yeah.
Is like, this is going to come to the forefront when you have,
it's not going to be a big deal until it's
like
a big deal.
No one cares if someone is playing and not doing anything. No one cares. But as soon as someone starts winning, now everyone's like, wait a second, we got to figure out what the heck is going on here. So,
And Natalie Ryan's being open about that, of like, where this in a lot of ways, I think, feels like a personal attack against her.
Because
in some ways, she's right, where like, she made it, she made it.
It's not
it,
personal
I don't say
attack.
An issue,
she brought
like
it to the
something
spotlight.
Had to be
she brought this, she brought it to the spotlight.
Exactly. She's the player that brought it to where mm-hmm. it had to be addressed one way or the other. A decision had to be made, and being the player in that shoes.
No,
I mean that's gotta suck. And so, like, especially with all of the you know unjustified hate comments that were coming in, like some were just awful comments all year. She had to deal with that all year just to get to the off season, and then she probably feels like the PDGA sided with all the people who hated her, and like, you know, I don't think that's actually what they were doing, but I can definitely see where that's what it feels like. And I mean, I can't imagine being in those shoes. Yeah. That sucks.
Well, we'll see what happens moving forward with the lawsuit. That will be an interesting story to continue to cover. Last thing I'll say is, like, I don't want anyone to ever attack someone for following the rules.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's,
Natalie Ryan's
I think that
wins
was my biggest
are not void now. It's not like all of a sudden she's not a Pro Tour champion. She is a Pro Tour champion. There's no way around that.
I think that was the thing that upset me the most is like someone was doing something by the guidelines that were set and people were attacking that person as being a bad person for doing that. I'm not cool with that. If you're following the rules and you're doing everything by the guidebook, by the rule book, you should not be attacked for that. If you want to attack like and critique, you know, her doing a lawsuit and all that stuff, like that stuff I think is all fair game. If you're like, well, this is ridiculous, whatever, that's all fair game. But you can't fault someone for following the rules. You can't. So
yeah,
that'll be the last thing I'll say about that.
All right.
All right. Good show.
There's a show.